welcome. So, going to begin today with the continuation of A New Earth. Reached the, I believe it's the last chapter, chapter 10, which is titled itself, A New Earth. Astronomers have discovered evidence to suggest that the universe came into existence 15 billion years ago in a gigantic explosion and has been expanding ever since. Not only has it been expanding, but it is also growing in complexity and becoming more and more differentiated. Some scientists also postulate that this movement from unity to multiplicity will eventually become reversed. The universe will then stop expanding and begin to contract again, and finally return to the unmanifested, the inconceivable nothingness out of which it came, and perhaps repeat the cycles of birth, expansion, contraction, and death again and again. For what purpose? Why does the universe go to all the bother of existing? Asks physicist Stephen Hawking, realizing at the same time that no mathematical model could ever supply the answer. If you look within rather than only without, however, you discover that you have an inner and an outer purpose, and since you are a microcosmic reflection of the macrocosm, it follows that the universe too has an inner and outer purpose inseparable from yours. The outer purpose of the universe is to create form and experience the interaction of forms, the play, the dream, the drama, or whatever you choose to call it. Its inner purpose is to awaken to its formless essence. Then comes the reconciliation of outer and inner purpose, to bring that essence, consciousness, into the world of form and thereby transform the world. The ultimate purpose of that transformation goes far beyond anything the human mind can imagine or comprehend. And yet, on this planet at this time, that transformation is the task allotted us. That is the reconciliation of outer and inner purpose, the reconciliation of the world and God. Before we look at what relevance the expansion and contraction of the universe has to your own life, we need to bear in mind here that nothing we say about the nature of the universe should be taken as an absolute truth. Neither concepts nor mathematical formulae can explain the infinite. No thought can encapsulate the vastness of the totality. Reality is a unified whole, but thought cuts it up into fragments. This gives rise to fundamental misperceptions. For example, that there are separate things and events, or that this is the cause of that. Every thought implies a perspective, and every perspective, by its very nature, implies limitation, which ultimately means that it is not true, at least not absolutely. Only the whole is true, but the whole cannot be spoken or thought. Seen from beyond the limitations of thinking, and therefore incomprehensible to the human mind, everything is happening now. All that ever has been or will be is now, outside of time, which is a mental construct. As an illustration of relative and absolute truth, consider the sunrise and sunset. When we say the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening, that is true, but only relatively. In absolute terms, it is false. Only from the limited perspective of an observer on or near the planet's surface does the sun rise and set. If you were far out in space, you would see that the sun neither rises nor sets, but that it shines continuously. And yet, even after realizing that, we can continue to speak of the sunrise or sunset, still see its beauty painted, write poems about it, even though we now know that it is a relative rather than an absolute truth. So let us continue to speak for a moment of another relative truth, the coming into form of the universe and its return to the formless, which implies the limited perspective of time, and see what relevance this has to your own life. The notion of my own life is, of course, another limited perspective, created by thought, another relative truth. There is ultimately no such thing as your life, since you and life are not two, but one. The following passage is titled A Brief History of Your Life. The coming into manifestation of the world, as well as its return to the unmanifested, its expansion and contraction, are two universal movements that we could call the outgoing and the return home. Those two movements are reflected throughout the universe in many ways, such as in the incessant expansion and contraction of your heart, as well as the inhalation and exhalation of your breath. They are also reflected in the cycles of sleep and wakefulness. Each night, without knowing it, you return to the unmanifested source of all life when you enter the stage of deep, dreamless sleep, and then re-emerge again in the morning, replenished. Those two movements, the outgoing and the return, are also reflected in each person's life cycles. Out of nowhere, so to speak, you suddenly appear in this world. Birth is followed by expansion. There is not only physical growth, but also growth of knowledge, activities, possessions, experiences. Your sphere of influence expands, and life becomes increasingly complex. This is a time when you are mainly concerned with finding or pursuing your outer purpose. Usually, there is also a corresponding growth of the ego, which is identification with all the above things. And so, your form identity becomes more and more defined. This is also the time when outer purpose growth tends to become unspurred by the ego, which, unlike nature, does not know when to stop in its pursuit of expansion and has a voracious appetite for more. And then, just when you thought you made it, or that you belong here, the return movement begins. Perhaps people close to you, begin to die. People who were a part of your world. Then your physical form weakens. Your sphere of influence shrinks. Instead of becoming more, you now become less. And the ego reacts to this with increasing anxiety or depression. Your world is beginning to contract, and you may find you are not in control anymore. Instead of acting upon life, life now acts upon you by slowly reducing your world. The consciousness that identified with form is now experiencing the sunset, the dissolution of form. And then one day, you too disappear. Your armchair is still there, but instead of you sitting in it, there is just an empty space. You went back to where you came from just a few years ago. Each person's life, each life form, in fact, represents a world, a unique way in which the universe experiences itself. And when your form dissolves, a world comes to an end, one of countless worlds. So I'm going to pause it there for the time being. I'm noticing my energy, so part of me would like to read on and to continue progressing towards the end of this chapter and book, but perhaps that's enough for this episode. So the previous passage, a very sort of understanding of the whole canvas, in a sense, and we may be a dot, a small drop of paint on that canvas, the canvas of one that is connected and perhaps reading about the big picture, or if this is given to the mind, then I can imagine there may be thoughts of what's the point, or perhaps thoughts of sadness. The nature of mind, of the separate self, the ego, it wants to stand out. It wants to make a difference, to do something important. And this energy flow can often contradict the sort of graceful totality that has an easy flow, where there is no place for the mind to be important. And there is no place to take charge and be heard. No place for story. For all of the things you've been through and that you need other people to know what you've been through and the importance of that, of your life events, there is no place there for this. And perhaps there's an immediate fear of death of the ego. But seen through the eyes of awareness, there's just a knowing recognition of, oh, yes. Find the analogy of sleep a useful one, which can mirror, as Eckhart has put it, the cycles of the universe, the cycles of life in the form we are in. And when we go into deep sleep, there isn't a sense of fear there. There's just a place of rest, and as you sink into deep sleep, there is no fear, there is no, it's the naturalness of that returning, of resting, and how perhaps it can be when the dissolution of form happens, as natural as sinking into a deep sleep. there is a pointer that Eckhart has mentioned. I'm not sure if it's been mentioned in this book, but it's been mentioned in one of his videos or audios, that is the pointer of die before you die. So another way to say it is become free. Before ultimately becoming free, we don't have a choice but to awaken in some ways to become free of ego. It may be a slow, perhaps painful way, or die before you die. You can choose, invite, cultivate the freedom now. And for me, it is a powerful pointer during a time where there is more challenges mentally with mind. Even though the words come out in a calm, clear manner, this is from a place of stillness. But if I was to access the mind, then there'd be the sense of unwellness that's there, waiting. For me, it could be if a decision needs to be made, relatively trivial decision. It tangles the mind. The mind is in such a... It's probably hard for me to be accurate about it, but perhaps in a very vague sort of way, it's in a very painful, contorted, damaged or eroded state. That it has trouble, for example, grasping or formulating a train of logical thoughts to decide one thing from another. Not sure how else to put it, but I guess the functionality of mind is simply currently not working very well, or and that can be down to either the condition of the mind, that whatever trauma or pain that my mind has been through, or the state of the result of the trauma and pain. So die before you die becomes a lifeline almost to follow that pointer back into stillness when possible, as things are so chaotic or painful, dysfunctional, and the suffering that comes with that, and the stories that are desperate to bloom. The stories in my mind that, well, I won't ever do this in my life, or I won't ever be in a relationship, I won't ever perhaps be able to have a career or take care of myself, be independent in that way. Of course, they're very meaningless in the present moment. It's just the circumstances of now, okay? So at times during vulnerability, then those stories can sometimes seep through and begin to fester. Other times they are seen coming from a distance and they are immediately taken care of in through returning to awareness again. But of course, the challenge of being in form and in this world, that mind is needed, whether to have a conversation with somebody, social interaction, making a decision, logical thinking, and interaction with senses when you're walking, going outside, navigating. So perhaps my focus is at the moment to tend to the suffering that those natural things, natural functionality of mind, that can bring to me because of the lack or the dysfunctional that the mind presents, where perhaps a smooth running mind, all minds have some wear and tear, almost like cars on the road. But one that perhaps may have more severe wear and tear, then there are more challenges, more for me to address and tend to, whether it's the social anxiety or walking in the park and the sharp, what can be perceived as sharp noises, the result, the impact of that, where the vulnerable mind, it may impact that a lot more than others. So there is the perhaps focus of taking care of the mind and taking care and tending to difficulties that occur as and when they do. And of course, it's not always possible to tend to the suffering. Sometimes perhaps the tending to is just to go through the suffering, the dysfunction of the mind, the witnessing of the dysfunction or eroding or found at times it can make it more challenging to step into presence. It can perhaps in some ways interrupt or make it difficult to remain in the present moment. Such is the dysfunction of the mind. And these are the challenges that are here. And again, going to inner and outer purpose. Perhaps for me, more inner purpose. Outer purpose seems to be perhaps shrinking or unclear, but inner purpose, accept this moment as it is. For me, it is the most important activity it is primary for all, but the level of importance for that now is even more so for myself, and less on outer purpose. Is a noticing when presence is not there, or thoughts have taken over or covered up the awareness, then there is even a wider dysfunction because of the state of my mind in this moment. Not being aware can bring up a huge vibration of suffering, and using terms of form of such as anxiety or depression, the symptoms of those definitions, the symptoms can be almost like turning the volume on sound from 0 to suddenly 10, and there is less in between levels, if that makes sense. It's more extreme for me in this time, and that seems to be perhaps slowly increasing. So, even though often there's a greater pull of mind to go into these labels of somebody who may be mentally unwell, challenged with their mental health, anxiety, depression, and there is a pull from mind . And the initial part of that can be quite genuine, it can be accurate, that okay, there is unwellness in mind, but the mind can be a bit cunning, it can use that to draw you in, because of course there needs to be, or there is a natural recognition of the state of mind, the state of emotions that are happening in the body, state of thoughts, feelings. But the mind sometimes wants to use the identity of somebody who's been through a lot, somebody who is mentally vulnerable, and on some level this is true. But the identity of that is not. The shape that it wants you to take, instead of the shapeless, lightness, freedom of not being contained or shaped in a very taut and tense way. But the mind wants that. It wants definition. As it wants to stand out, it wants me and my story, me and my suffering. So there is an awareness of acknowledging mental health, acknowledging, okay, there are these challenges, what needs to be done now in in this moment. But then being aware of the very subtle stepping into identification that's just on the other side, almost like tissue paper. It's waiting, it's there. And by going into that identity comes with it a river of thoughts, of an energy as well from that, such as giving up. Why do I bother living anymore? Things are just getting worse, and huge thought structures. And each of those develop emotions and more thought structures. It's almost like going on a theme park ride. It's so immersive. You can imagine those of dinosaurs and great drops and water, and it's so immersive. It's almost like that. You, again, this is describing the simple covering of awareness, but it can be so immersive, and that you believe that to be you and the world you're in. So there's a simple, for me, remaining in awareness and being alert to those energies that arise. So just a few moments of stillness. To leave this episode with the knowing of the river of life, the river of consciousness, that births the universe, expands, contracts, and the same with form and the world we live in, with, as Eckhart puts it, our heartbeats, heart contracting and expanding, our breath, inhale and exhale, all the flow of consciousness, just, and just aligning with that flow. So lots of activities happening, lots of things, but just the simplicity of aligning with this flow. Consciousness is happening, is unfolding and flowing, and we are just aligning with that. The freeing, the limitless flow, that's all you're being aware of, just aligning with that and flowing, enjoying the great joy that's in the flow of consciousness, the flow of life. And life will tell you when you are not aligned. with that. It's all taken care of. Thank you for joining me for this episode. I wish you well, and I will speak to you again very soon. Take care.